Today on The Grave Talks, haunting in Washington. In 2010, June Matthews moved into her perfect home just north of Spokane, Washington, with her husband. At first, the house seemed like everything she had ever wanted, with only a few odd notes that could clearly be fixed, as most new homes have. Ignoring the strange feelings she got out of the basement and not being believers in the paranormal, the couple purchased the home and began their new life behind its walls. Was this the start of a haunting in Washington? That's when things started going wrong, and the haunting began. Unexplained noises in the nights, doors and drawers opening on their own, and eventually voices of the dead haunting them as they tried to sleep. They both very quickly became believers in the paranormal and accepted the fact that they lived in a very haunted house.
I have never been a believer in the paranormal. Well, the paranormal just means things happening that are out of the realm of normal everyday life. So I never believed in ghosts or spirits, or I didn't think anybody's house could be haunted. I truly believed all of that was just campfire Girl Scout stuff and silly. And I was like actually pretty judgmental about it. Now I can look back and recall things that have happened that I think were affiliated with the paranormal. But before we moved here, I was a drug and alcohol counselor. I have 22 years clean and sober. We had three kids. Well, we still have three kids, but they're grown. And our daughter came from California and moved to Washington because my husband was offered a fantastic position. And we had the opportunity to move up to the mountains where we had always planned on moving when he retired. And now all of a sudden we had this opportunity in front of us where we could go live out our retirement dream. And even though he would still work, this is where we would, you know, spend the rest of our lives. And coming from California, we lived in a very exclusive and beautiful neighborhood. But in California, you can't have land unless you're a billionaire. Everyone's packed in like sardines, and you know, we wanted to be able to have actual land and live near water. And my husband and I do a lot of target shooting, and you know, in California you have to drive for miles to go do that, and here you can shoot guns right in your backyard. And so when we got here, I never, ever, ever expected anything like this to happen. I have other issues, which is what I thought it was at the beginning, which is I have a thing called complex post-traumatic stress disorder. I had a very difficult childhood. When I was a teenager, I was... The literal word for it is kidnapped, although I voluntarily got in the car when I was 12. And I didn't come back again until I was 17. And during that time, I was very severely abused by the man that took me and was forced to do a lot of pretty horrible things. And so CPTSD is like post-traumatic stress is something that somebody would get if they were in a car accident. And CPTSD is something that happens to people that are like held captive So soldiers have PTSD, you know, from just hearing gunshots and, you know, but having a more stressful experience or being a prisoner of war would give you CPTSD.
And I want to talk about that in just a little bit. I wanted to ask a question about something that you had mentioned earlier, where when you look back now, and obviously we'll get to what happened with the house and in the house, but when you look back to life before you moved to the house, you had mentioned that you can think of and identify some things that may have been paranormal. What were some of those things specifically prior to the house that you look back on now and you go, maybe there was something more to that?
The first one was when my daughter was very young. My current husband is not her father, so I was a single parent. And she was, we were alone in an apartment. She was very little, 4 or 5 months old. And there was a lot of weird things that started happening in this apartment. And I pretty much associated them with her biological father. We had broken up. He was difficult and, you know, so I would come home and find, like, well, my mailbox had been, you know, pried open. Or one time there was a weird pile of rotting fruit stacked up in front of my front door. But then it started changing. Those things, obviously, I could attribute to him. But then it started changing where I started hearing scratching in the walls. And so I thought maybe there was mice or something in the inside the wall. The water in my bathtub went on by itself quite a few times. And I just figured that there's some logical reason for it. And then I started getting that feeling that somebody's staring at me. And, of course, there wasn't anybody there that I could see. But I had, like, pictures in my bathroom and my bedroom fall off the walls. Things that didn't make sense, but I just, that's just not a place where I would have gone with it.
Sure.
And then there was this horrible smell in my bedroom. And so I moved my daughter's bassinet or her little crib into the living room, and her and I stayed in the living room. Because of the scratching sounds and the weird smell and, like, banging and knocking, things that would, but mostly it was the smell.
Yeah.
I don't know what the smell was, or I didn't at the time, but it turned out that our neighbor next door had committed suicide and died under his electric blanket and hadn't been discovered for a while. So it was actually the smell that made somebody go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. I don't know. I mean, obviously the smell I can attribute. That's a physiological.
You found an explanation for the smell. I'm assuming after that was where he was discovered, I'm assuming it went away somewhat. I'm sure it permeated some things a bit, but.
Well, actually, I ended up having to move because of the smell.
Oh, really? Okay.
But what was, which I didn't think about at the time, but since being here, I've thought of it because I've been asked if I'd ever had experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And this overwhelming feeling that someone was staring at me or in my apartment or feeling like I wasn't alone. And weird, there was a man who didn't look like my neighbor, but I had my front door open one day because it was warm. And some man just walked in and sat down and started talking to me. And it scared me. And I kind of secretly got a weapon and didn't really know what to do because I had my daughter there, my little sister was there, my little brother, and I was babysitting. And now I have my own child there. Mm-hmm. And he said a lot of weird things. We just want to make sure you're okay. And are you happy? And I just thought, this is just a crazy man.
Sure.
And then I tried to lock my little sister in my bedroom, and the littler ones were sleeping, but she was like 5, and I wanted her to go in the bedroom and lock the door. And when I turned around, the guy was gone. Certainly, he could have just walked out.
Sure.
It was just a series of bizarre things. But after the man next door was discovered, that overwhelming feeling that somebody is hiding in the apartment or staring at me, it just stopped. And it wasn't just... It was so overwhelming that it would bring me to tears, because it was really frightening me and made me feel really crazy, because I knew there wasn't anybody there.
Sure.
And one night I saw a shadow behind my behind my bedroom. There was a big, I had a big, long, big, giant bedroom window. And on the other side of my bedroom, there was just this lot, and it had, you know, big lights shining on nothing. And so if somebody were to walk up to my window, seeing their shadow would make sense. And so there were a few times where I saw a man looking into my window. And I'd never walked around, and finally I walked around to see if I could see anything on the other side where my window was. And then that's how I realized that you'd have to be 9 feet tall,
yep,
to be able to stand and for your shadow to show. And I tried to debunk it. And I just figured at the time that I'm just not smart enough to figure it out. It's somehow a shadow from down the street.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It's easier to jump into some sort of a logical conclusion than try to expect or jump into a world of paranormal, especially if it's something that you don't accept as being existing at that time. So
right.
That's totally understandable. Well, let's move over to when you got closer, when you got to the new house. You find this place. It's going to be your retirement home. It's your dream home. This is your home. This is your place where you are going to be happy and live out the rest of your life. What's it like when you first go into the house? What are you thinking? What are you feeling?
Well, we were, my husband's new company had flown us both out here for 5 days and put us up in a hotel. And I'd already made arrangements for a real estate agent. And she would come and pick us up every morning. But because all the areas we were looking at were rural, and, you know, some had 40 acres, and everything was spaced out really far apart. So each house that she had set up like 5 to 8 houses a day, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it was an all-day thing to get from one house to the other. And so we didn't really have very much time. And this one, she said that we actually had an appointment. This was vacant or empty, and we had an appointment at a house that was occupied. So we were only going to be here for like 20 minutes. And, you know, if we liked anything, of course, we could come back another day. And so we pulled up, and it's got a very long, it's an acre-long driveway, but it's kind of, the driveway is kind of shaped like a macaroni. And so from the street and from the bottom of the driveway, you can't see the house at all anyway. And so the first thing I saw was a shop or an outbuilding, which we don't have these in California. So I didn't know what the hell this thing was. It was enormous. And I thought that was going to be the house.
Sure.
And so my first thing was, no, I don't want to live here. That's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no, this is just the outbuilding, one of the outbuildings. It's a massive. It's almost the size of the house.
Okay.
And So she had me look up, and way up on this hill was this very beautiful house. And we had seen quite a few already, and nothing compared to this house. I mean, it looked like a painting. It was so perfect looking. And I don't know, I couldn't believe what I was seeing, because everything else that she'd shown us was, you know, same number of bedrooms, same size house, same acreage, but they were just awful, and it seemed like they weren't very well kept up. And this house was spectacular. I mean, it had just the most... It just had so many details. It still does, but it's so many details. You couldn't even see everything just from the outside. It had a staircase that goes up from the first flat area. So you go up one part of the driveway, and it's flat, and that's where the shop is. And then there's a big, huge hill with stairs going up to what looks like the front door. And so my first response was, well, that's a pretty house, but I don't think I'm going to be able to live here because I have a bad back, and I'm never going to be able to walk up these stairs. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, no, this is an option, but you drive all the way up the rest of the driveway, and there's another front door. So she drove us up, and it was hard to even get into the house. I could have spent an hour just looking at things outside. You know, it was like somebody just carefully placed this very pretty house in the middle of the forest.
So no feelings initially of there being anything odd
No.
or wrong. Just this is the right house. This is the place for us. So you get into the house, yep. You start to get settled, and I know you said at the beginning,
well,
you were kind of starting to write some things off as being caused by the CPTSD. How did that all begin? What were some of those first weeks like?
Well, first let me just clarify something.
Yeah.
Before we ever entered the house. Once we were inside the house, things started getting weird.
Okay.
And both my husband and I, when we went downstairs, because the upstairs is typically the downstairs. So when you go through the upstairs front door, that's where the living room, kitchen, dining room, eat-in kitchen area, master bedroom, master bathroom, the laundry room, it's all upstairs. Mm-hmm. And then downstairs is the family room and game room and more bedrooms, and then the other front door entrance. So when the upstairs we thought was very nice, the view is spectacular, everything was beautiful. But when we went downstairs, both my husband and I at the same time said, wow, it's really creepy down here. And neither one of us could really pinpoint why it was creepy. And I just said, well, once we paint it and decorate it, you know, it won't feel creepy. But it was pretty strange. There was a lot of, as we were walking around downstairs, I was getting pretty creeped out. And, you know, like I always would, I just attributed that to just being overtired.
Okay.
And this wasn't something my husband believed in either, so it wasn't like we ever discussed it or talked about it.
It was just you can fix it, essentially. If there's something that you're uncomfortable with, it's a new house, it's not attributed to paranormal, if we need to do some painting, we need to get some more lighting, whatever it may
right.
be, it can be changed, it can be fixed.
Right.
Okay.
And again, I couldn't pinpoint why it was creepy. It's a beautiful house.
Sure.
It just... Yeah, it was like walking into a cemetery tomb.
Gosh.
Downstairs. It was, I don't know, it was really creepy. It was really cold.
So let me ask you this. I mean, obviously you fell in love with the outside. The inside had its good points and its bad points. What made you decide to make this the house?
We had, I think we only had 2 days left.
Okay.
And the houses she was taking us to see, they was just getting worse.
Okay.
Some of these people, she said they were, I don't know what you call them, the people that think the world is coming to an end.
Okay.
And they are stocking up on things.
Sure.
And, yeah, preppers. My daughter just said preppers. That's, they're preparing for the world to come to an end. And so, you know, you'd walk into the house, and although we have guns, you know, walking into a house where the living room is covered with ammo boxes.
Sure.
And water and canned, it just freaked me out.
Yeah.
And then there was actually one house I walked into, and I was so creeped out just by the feeling that I got in the house. It wasn't actually the house.
Yeah.
That I turned right around and walked out.
Sure.
And this house, you know, it was funny because I didn't until much later even remember that we thought downstairs was creepy. You know, that whole thing just kind of blew right past us.
Everything else in comparison, just the nervous energy in some of the other places just made it pale in compare. Well, take us back take us back to the house. Take us back to you decided to move into this house, get that house. You get in there, first couple weeks. What's life like?
We walked in. The house, first of all, had... it was just amazing. It had things... I don't even know how to explain this. At our other house, we had a beautiful home in California. But I wanted to make changes to that house. And it was so expensive that, you know, we probably were never going to be able to do it. But I wanted, like, granite countertops. I wanted to change the spindles on the banister to wrought iron. I wanted the brick out of the fireplace, and I wanted rock. I wanted to change the kitchen cabinets. I wanted all these different things to make that house what I wanted. And what was so interesting was coming here, this house had every single thing I wanted to change in the old house in it already. The wood floors, the exact spindles on the banister were the ones we were pricing in California. The rock fireplace and the wood ceilings and the wood floors and the tile. And it was pretty crazy that everything that we wanted to do was already here. So that was just a big plus.
Sure.
And
almost like it was meant for you, for in kind of a weird, you know, world coming together sort of way.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly.
So that's a good thing. So you had that kind of going for you, a feeling this is, it's just right. It's meant to be almost.
Exactly. And then we had a very strenuous, we had to drive here. And it's a horrible drive from California to...
Sure.
To Washington. My God, it was terrible. And I have a bad back, and so being in places that long, you know, sitting in a car that long, it was very hard on me. And we had our animals, and it was just terrible.
Sure.
You know, I had the dogs, he had the cats, everyone's barking and crying. It's awful. And the movers weren't going to be able to get here for... we would have been here by about a week by the time they were scheduled to be here. Mm-hmm. So we brought a bunch of things ourselves. And we had it all planned out, set out to move, or set out to start the drive, and then there was a big storm in California. So we had to postpone leaving one day. And then during the drive, they called the real estate office called my husband and said that we had to get there before 4 o'clock on Friday because that was going to be, we had to go to the office to retrieve the house keys because we bought everything. We went back to California and did everything, purchased the house and everything while we were there in California. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have any house keys, and our real estate agent apparently got very, very ill and had been flown to California, and they found like cancer all over her whole body, and she was dying. And the day after we moved into the house, she actually passed away. So that was pretty shocking. And so we had to, you know, race as much as we could and try to just get here without stopping. So it took 2 days, and we did get our keys just in the nick of time, and we pulled up to the house. I was really excited. We walked in, and this house was completely different looking than what we had seen. When we first saw the house, it had been staged with furniture, which, of course, they moved out. But it was also bright and clean, and it had literally only been 31 days since we saw the house. 32 days, I'm sorry. And when we walked in, the first thing that hit you was the smell inside the house. I still don't know what it was, but it kind of smelled like burning chemicals. Mm-hmm. And so one of our theories was that maybe the owner's teenage kids came and partied in here, and I don't know. I don't know what they did.
Sure.
But
some sort of a logical explanation.
There was this substance all over the walls, all over the light switches, and every place you could think of. It was like a sticky brown, I don't know what the hell this was. If you smoked a carton of cigarettes a day, it couldn't look like this. So I don't know what would have created this, but there was also cobwebs. It was crazy. This place was filthy. The bathtub downstairs, it took my husband 3 days to clean this, but just the bathtub. It was like there was mud. There was mud in the bathtub. There was mud on the outside of the refrigerator. And then when you opened it, there was mud smeared inside the refrigerator. So we decided that there were handprints, fingerprints, every place you looked. Like somebody just walked around with muddy hands touching everything. And so we decided that since the homeowners would never make contact, that was part of this deal, was that we weren't supposed to make contact with them. We would have to have our realtor contact their realtor. And we had like lots of questions, and we weren't going to get answers. So,
sure.
So what we kind of, my husband decided that most likely they were mad because this property came with an attached property across the street. But the property across the street in the spring turns into like swampland. So it's basically you'd just be buying it so nobody could build something there, but how the hell is anybody ever going to build anything there?
Sure.
And the bank wouldn't give us a loan for it. We would have bought it, but they wanted no part of this. Mm-hmm. And so to this day, they did just sell it, but they were stuck for years with this property. So we figured maybe they were pissed off.
Okay.
That they didn't get everything that they wanted. We got this house. Ours was the only offer on this house for years. And so, you know,
yeah,
they didn't get what they wanted.
Okay.
So But we walked in, and between the smell and the dirt and the mud and the fingerprints and just, it was just overwhelming. I just burst into tears because this place was so dirty. I couldn't imagine sleeping in it. And so we got back in the car and went to the store and bought every cleaning supply we could get our hands on and came back and started cleaning. And for the first 3 days, my husband was here, and this job was going to require him to be out of town.
Okay.
And so his first out-of-town assignment was 3 days after we moved in. And, you know, we got everything that I would need while he was gone, you know, groceries and cleaning supplies and stuff. We still didn't have furniture yet because the movers hadn't made it here yet. But we had quite a few things and quite a few boxes that we drove up with us. So I still had a lot of things to keep me busy, and we went and bought paint. And so I wasn't really too worried about it. It was a little creepy because I was now in a state I'd never been in. I don't know a living soul here. The only person I did know was dying or had died. By then she had passed away. And I didn't even know where the store was, even though I'd been there with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you just, nothing was working. Couldn't find the GPS. I couldn't find a cell phone. We kept losing everything, so we couldn't tell if things were, it was just a little creepy because I felt kind of stuck here.
Sure.
Like there wasn't really anything I could do till he came home or till the movers brought all our stuff. And so the first day he left, and I was trying, you know, I was a little scared because I'm in the middle of nowhere. And even though there are neighbors, you literally can't see another human being. You can't see another house. You just see trees and animals. That's it. There are people here, but they're pretty far away. We have one neighbor that's kind of close. But pretty much you're just alone. And I didn't really know what to expect. So, you know, I had guns and I kept him out. But the day he left, I gave him a big hug and kiss and, you know, didn't want him to be worried about me. So I didn't tell him any of my concerns or fears. And off he drove down the driveway. And probably 15 minutes, maybe even less, maybe 10 minutes after he left, I was in the kitchen, and we had a box of dishes and some important things like our wedding glasses and stuff that we brought ourselves. And so I had taken them out, and I was washing them. And I heard the front door open, which I knew was locked. I heard my husband's keys. So I started saying, you know, I guess you can't stay away from me or something. And I'm joking around with him. And I could hear him behind me. He had walked all the way into the kitchen. He didn't verbally respond to me, but I'd been talking the whole time, so, and I was kind of joking around, and the water was loud. So I had the sink water on and the dishwasher going. And anyway, I went to go wipe my hands off on a towel, and I flipped around to give him a hug, and he wasn't there. But I'm telling you, I could hear, I heard his keys. I heard his footsteps. I heard the front door open. I heard him walking. You know how you can feel somebody's right behind you?
Sure.
I was, I never doubted for a second that he had come back, that it wasn't him. It wasn't anybody. There was nobody there.
What's going through your mind at that moment?
I was at first really blown away. Well, the very first thing was I went around the corner into the dining room to see if he'd step back into the dining room or something, because you had to be here. I could hear you. I know he was here. And when I couldn't find him anywhere, I don't know. At first, I wanted to call him. I didn't want him to be scared for me.
Sure.
Or think that I couldn't handle this. And...
But troubling, I'm sure, because this is something that you don't believe even exists yet.
I still wasn't thinking it was paranormal.
Sure.
Mostly I went, after I looked and I couldn't find him, I went and got my gun. And I walked around the upstairs looking around. I checked the windows and the doors. Everything was locked.
Yeah.
And I went back to the sink and I turned on the water and I tried to replicate the sound of his keys by having the water hit the plates and
sure,
stuff.
Sure.
I was trying to figure out how the hell this could happen because I could hear everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never been more shocked than when I turned around and he wasn't there. But still, paranormal stuff, you know, the last thing in the world, I just figured, you know, okay, it's a new house. Makes weird noises. It's a combination of the dishwasher and the water.
Sure.
And I kind of figured, you know, I'm here by myself for the first time. I'm going to overreact.
It's something logical is what you're going
yeah.
through. That wraps up part one of our interview with June Matthews about her haunting in Washington and her book, The Reliving. In part two of our interview, what was the tipping point that made her believe ghosts exist and that she, in fact, had a haunting in her home? What strange objects were found stacked as a pyramid on her living room floor? What caused a large antique record player to move on its own to a new location? What kind of evidence did June find when she accepted that her home was haunted and began to investigate? And how did a fan not connected to any power source suddenly start working? And why did a defiant EVP tell June that he doesn't give a F about their haunting troubles? Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.